Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Happy Friday. We made it. Thanks for being part of our Let's Go There family. And guess what? It's 46 days until the election.
Yes, it is. The clock is ticking. And honestly, I'm getting nervous and nervous, like as the time comes closer. It's just going to be a lot. You know, I think the next day, November 4th, is going to be a very telling day and a very important day in history. Like, what have we done? Is it good? Is it bad? I don't know. We'll find out. But yeah, I'm excited.
It feels very surreal. That is for sure. And with that said, coming up on the show, we're going to be talking about all the money Trump is promising now from Puerto Rico to a new relief bill. But is that going to actually solve all of America's problems, or is it just going to be a Band-Aid for his election? That's what it kind of feels like. So we're going to be getting into that later in the show. And also, of course, the latest updates on TikTok, because everyone wants to know. But I also wanted to say happy Rosh Hashanah for all the Jews listening. And for the non-Jews who are, you know, like, what do they say? Adopted Jews. What's the thing when you're like honorary Jews? Like, Ryan, you are an honorary Jew to me.
Can I just put out there that you just asked a non-Jewish person what the Jewish like moment was? She has
forgot what there's a saying that people say honorary Jews, but it is the Jew year. Happy New Year for the Jews. And as you know, I'm not religious. I'm spiritual. I like the traditions, and I'm going to be having a really nice Rosh Hashanah dinner tonight.
That's exciting. To keep
the holiday alive.
I love that. That's very, very exciting. But let's get into the show because we got a lot to cover.
Mm-hmm. We found out this week about a plan for the U.S. USPS to send masks to every household. That would have been great, but it was nixed by the administration. Well, reporters asked Trump about it today, and here's what he had to say.
I think, frankly, if they would raise the price of packaging, you'd end up making a lot of money or breaking even or doing something. The post office has been a mess for many, many generations, but for certainly decades, and it loses a lot of money. It's always lost a lot of money. And one of the reasons it loses a lot of money now is that it's delivering all these packages, and every time they deliver a package, they lose $3 a package or whatever the number may be.
Okay, that didn't really answer the question, but okay. That's all I have to say.
Does it ever answer the question, really?
Let's be honest. Where did this even go? I can't even follow. Today, the Trump administration announced $13 billion in additional aid to Puerto Rico to help with rebuilding in the aftermath of 2017's Hurricane Maria. Puerto Rico Governor Wanda Vasquez Garcet tweeted this morning that Federal Emergency Management Agency Administrator Pete Gaynor told her that $13 billion has been approved. She, of course, thanked the White House and President Donald Trump. It will include an $11.6 billion federal share of funding for the projects. $13 billion, that's big. And it's also probably his attempt to appeal to Puerto Rican voters who moved to the swing state of Florida after the hurricane struck Puerto Rico. Now, a heavily criticized recommendation from the CDC last month about who should be tested for the coronavirus was not written by CDC scientists and was posted to the agency's website despite their serious objections. And that is according to a report published by the New York Times. The document was supposed to go through a vetting process, but instead it was just posted to the site. And in a statement last night, CDC Director Dr. Robert Redfield told CNN, "The guidelines, coordinated in conjunction with the White House Coronavirus Task Force, received appropriate attention, consultation, and input from task force experts." That's not according to what has been told the New York Times and now CNN. So we're not sure who to believe, but something happened that was not kosher, that's for sure. That was what's trending this hour. Now let's move into top stories in pop culture. What's going on, Ryan?
All right, it's time for the Tea Report. Those pop culture moments that are trending right now. Now, we have been talking about Cheers on Netflix, Jerry Harris, all this week after the news broke about basically how he was arrested on federal child pornography charges. Well, his coach, if you remember her coach, Monica, she's actually speaking out. She broke her silence on the whole thing. She said that she is devastated after finding out this news. She said, "My heart is shattered into a million pieces. I am devastated by the shocking, unexpected news." She also added that our children must be protected from abuse, and I'm praying hard for the victims and everyone affected. She also adds that the fans respect her privacy as her family mourns during this heartbreaking time. I mean, Jerry was the breakout star.
Yeah, it's very sad.
It's very, 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 very devastating. Now, moving on to also devastating news, depending on how you look at it. NeNe Leakes is leaving Real Housewives of Atlanta. She broke her silence because there was a lot of rumors floating around. No one was sure if she was filming. The show is currently filming right now. And guess what? She said, after months of discussion between her team and Bravo, she has decided that she will not be returning to the hit franchise's 13th season. Here is a clip.
I have made the very hard and difficult decision to not be a part of Real Housewives of Atlanta season 13. It wasn't an easy decision for me. It was hard. I started on the Real Housewives of Atlanta in 2008.
Now, she went on to reminisce over her time on the series, which started with the show's debut season back in 2008. And of course, she took a break from the show during season 8 and 9, only to return for seasons 10 through 12. And yeah, I mean, she's kind of just caught hanging it up at this point. She's not going to be a part of the cast anymore. It seems like it's a permanent decision. And that is your Tea Report coming out of those pop culture moments.
I can't even keep up.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Anyway. Coming up, Biden spoke out clarifying his stance on important issues at a drive-in town hall last night. That's how we're doing these town halls now. But did he shine or fall flat? We get into that next in 2 minutes. Joe Biden's CNN town hall was last night, moderated by Anderson Cooper. It took place at a drive-in. That's where we're at these days. And questioners parked their cars around them, approached microphones near the stage to ask questions. Now, here's just one of the standout moments from last night.
Look, if the president had even remote confidence he was likely to win the election, he wouldn't be doing this. Remember, I wasn't on your show, but I said some months ago, I predict the president's going to try to move the election date. And everybody said, oh, he'd never do that. Guess what? He suggested maybe we should move the election date, postpone the election. And he's done every single thing, including having a postmaster general who still doesn't know who dismantled those machines.
And back with us to give us the recap of it all is Democratic political strategist Drexel Hurd. Thanks again for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's been a while.
I know. Now, of course, this week was also Trump's town hall that he did with ABC. How do you think that Biden held up in comparison?
Sure. I think, you know, what you saw last week from President Trump is exactly what we're going to get in 2 weeks when, as it pertains to the debates. Unclear answers, no policy, nothing, no record that he can run on. And I think last night what we saw was a really sharp Joe Biden really answer the questions that were in front of him. I think one of the great things about Joe Biden, and we talk about, you know, stylistic things, is that he's able to personalize every issue that he is asked about.
So do you think Joe Biden is doing a good job by resisting that he's being pressured into embracing some of the more progressive goals that the Democratic Party and Donald Trump is saying that is going to ruin America? Do you think he's doing a good job? And he kind of showed that last night that he's going to stay in that middle and stay moderate. And like he mentions, he says, I'm not going to be a Democratic president. I'm going to be America's president. How do you feel about that?
Sure. So I think that's similar to a lot of the rhetoric, at least on that part, similar to a lot of the rhetoric that Barack Obama talked about in his 2004 speech. So this isn't new. I think, you know, one of the things that we've seen from Donald Trump is that he continues to be the president of the far left, where he's out there spewing QAnon theories and retweeting them and coming up with his own facts about what's in his head. In this case, you know, you're talking specifically about the fracking portion, which I know is in a CNN article. You know, the vice president has called for an action to address climate change and protect the environment. You know, he was the one of the first bills that he had that he passed in the 1980s was the Global Climate Protection Act. So the vice president has been really progressive on issues, but he also understands that certain parts of this country, you know, aren't as not ready for certain things as everybody else. And I think
how do you balance that, though? Because here's the thing. I think we all knew, and that's the reason why a lot of younger Democrats, at least, they're not really big fans of Joe Biden. And I think the consensus is like, oh, we're just going to vote for him because we need to, right, at this point. So how do you balance, you know, really making sure that the progressive side of the party really is feeling heard, but also not playing too far left where you're kind of at this moment where, you know, it can really screw you up politically. And you mentioned Obama back in 2004, but we weren't as progressive in 2004 as we are now. Sure, so how does that really play out?
Sure. I think that you can't really equate progressive values with American values to the extent that you're excluding a whole side. To say that Joe Biden's out there saying, I want to be America's president. Well, that's exactly what he is. He is the president of the United States. He's not the president of the Democratic Party or the president of the progressive movement. So when he's out there saying, I want to make sure that we're not leaving behind, you know, those in Scranton, those in flyover states, those farmers across America, that while we are more progressive here in Los Angeles or in New York or in Seattle or in Portland and a lot of those places. One of the things, the criticism from 2006 and 2016, I'm sorry, is that Hillary Clinton really didn't speak to those middle of America voters.
That was, yeah.
You're right. What you're saying is really important to take note of. And again, you're listening to Democratic political strategist Drexel Hurd. And what you mentioned is important to say that, okay, progressives are important. They'll vote for you. But when you're going after president, you're going after representing all the people what you think is the best for everyone, sure. Right? Yeah. Do you think that Biden is responding well to, you know, the claims that electing him would lead to widespread violence and chaos in the streets of America, and particularly the suburbs, coming from the right and Trump? Do you think he's used these town halls to respond to that?
Absolutely. Look, I think that the vice president has been very clear on his positions, especially as you saw last week, we had two sheriff's deputies shot here in Los Angeles County. Vice president was one of the first people to come out and talk about that violence. In that same day, we also saw Los Angeles County deputies, manhandle a reporter here in Los Angeles. So I think that you can talk about, and the vice president has been pretty good about talking about both things at the same time. You know, when it comes to the violence that's happening across America, you're also seeing this is Trump's America, and that's something that that Joe Biden talked about last night, and that the violence that's happening all across the country. It's happening under Trump's watch, and that is has a lot to do with the rhetoric that's being used from the White House, who he's specifically talking about. We started this presidency out with pitchforks and fire things in Virginia. And so, you know, that's how this presidency has started, and that's how this presidency is going to end. And Joe Biden is certainly going to clear that up, hopefully, after this election in November.
All right. Democratic political strategist Drexel Hurd, thanks as always for being here. We appreciate it.
Thanks, everybody.
Now, coming up, the time has finally come. You might have to say goodbye to TikTok this weekend. Details on the latest announcement next in 2 minutes. The TikTok debate in the U.S. continues, and we got news today that starting Sunday, downloads of the popular video app TikTok and the messaging app WeChat, owned by ByteDance, will be banned in the United States, according to the U.S. Department of Commerce. The app will officially shut down November 12th. Oh my God, people are freaking out. I mean, you probably have kids that are not going to be able to survive this whole weekend. The Trump administration said the move was necessary to safeguard the national security of the U.S., and Trump did did issue an executive order in August, if you can remember, saying the apps would shut down if they were not sold. David Bloom joins us right now to dive in. He's a senior contributor at Forbes and host of Bloom in Tech podcast. Thanks for being here.
Always delighted to be with you, Shira.
So those are both owned by ByteDance, right?
No, I think Tencent owns WeChat.
Okay, so those are one of the bigger companies that are in China.
Three or four biggest tech companies in China. And WeChat is, I know it's hard for people in the United States to believe this, but WeChat is actually much, much more important in China than TikTok or its Douyin, which is its Chinese sibling, I guess.
Yeah. So go to TikTok, because this has been everywhere.
We were hearing about TikTok users in the United States. There's probably 3 or 4 million WeChat users, mostly people that have something to do in China. So
yeah, which is a big deal. So we were hearing about Microsoft, then Oracle was confirmed to buy TikTok. What happened?
It's difficult to talk about any of this without noting the political stuff going on. First of all, Mr. Trump was upset in July or June when TikTok K-pop fans helped work together to make his Tulsa political rally a mess. Mm-hmm. There are those that believe that that was what motivated him much more than national security issues, though those are, I think, legitimate and certainly worth addressing. Then he's in the middle of a political campaign. He's trying to get reelected, and beating up on the Chinese government is certainly a convenient and useful, bad boy. These are two of the biggest Chinese-owned platforms in the world. These are the ones that have broken out beyond China's own borders, and particularly TikTok, after it bought Musical.ly, 3 years ago. And folded all the Musical.ly users in. Originally, it was going to be Microsoft, where it kind of made sense that they would buy it, and Walmart was going to come in and help buy because they wanted to have access to all that data too, and connect with fans for e-commerce because they're really trying to get into e-commerce. But it's impossible to avoid the fact that Oracle got involved, and both Larry Ellison, one of the world's richest men, and chairman of Oracle, and his CEO, Safra Katz, are both big donors to Mr. Trump.
Wow. Isn't that interesting? And again, we're talking to David Bloom, senior contributor at Forbes and host of Bloom in Tech podcast. As we give you all the updates on TikTok, WeChat, officially banned from the U.S. App Store starting Sunday.
Right. Though they have until 8 days after the election on November 3rd, I think, to actually do some things which will allow the Oracle proposal that was put before those guys this week gives Oracle 20% ownership. And some of the companies that invested in ByteDance, there are a bunch of private equity firms, three of those still want to own a piece of this thing. And then Walmart still wants a piece. So it's
complicated.
Really—
okay. So this is boring. I really want to know if I'm a Gen Zer and if I have this downloaded on my phone, once this ban happens on Sunday, does that mean I can't use it anymore? Is it completely done? Like what happens at this point?
Well, my understanding is you could still use it if you have it. And in fact, something like 1 million people downloaded the app, according to App Annie, stats I was given earlier today.
Yeah.
Something like 1 million people downloaded in the last several days. So clearly people were trying to get
more downloads from this announcement.
Yes. Yes.
Of course.
The last 7 days, I think it was something like 180,000 a day were downloading
it. People don't want to miss out.
They don't want to miss out. So the issue becomes how much they actually enforce something. If this is a political thing and Ellison is his pal, he's not going to kill the golden goose, right? Or the goose who lays the golden egg.
The deal, yeah.
Right. So he's not going to kill the deal, but he wants to have majority U.S. ownership and all that. So
David, we've talked about this before with some other interviews when we were covering this topic. If this was banned, don't you think the Gen Zer millennials who we want to get out to vote, maybe this becomes an incentive because they're like, F this, Trump is ruining the places that we love.
I have joked that this is the teenpocalypse because Fortnite is locked into a mess with Apple. That makes it very difficult to get a hold of Fortnite. They can't go to school, or if they do, they got to wear masks all day, or they're stuck on things. And now TikTok is getting beaten up, and it, nothing else is going to be hamstrung for weeks to come. And we don't know if that algorithm, which makes it really great, right, if that's going to come with the deal, because they don't want to let it go, or the Chinese government doesn't want to let it go, blah, blah, blah. So
right.
it could be just hamstrung. I will note that Charli D'Amelio, the biggest star, and her family have all now opened accounts on Triller, the competitor, and those are not exclusive deals, but they've moved over there. And if you're a creator, you probably ought to spread your chips around. That's all I'm saying.
Good to know. All right. David Bloom, senior contributor at Forbes and host of Bloom in Tech podcast. Thanks again for joining us.
Always glad to see you. Take care, guys.
Yeah, you too. Now coming up, there's a parody to the Nobel Peace Prize event that's been going on since 1991. We'll be telling you about some of the world's most unorthodox experiments that were honored. That's next. We talked about the Nobel Peace Prize nominees last week. Well, there's actually a parody of them called the IG Nobels, and they have been awarded since 1991.
Shira, I really don't know how you find this stuff, but this sounds hilarious. I don't really know what this means, but please explain.
Well, the IG Nobel Prize, and thanks for asking, Ryan, is a prestigious-ish award that commemorates the science world's more unorthodox experiments. And the types of experiments they honored have been getting a lot of attention in the news because they're out there, but they also are pretty interesting. So I'm going to go through some of them right now. One of them was that narcissists can be identified by their eyebrows. So distinct eyebrows means that someone's a narcissist. So think about it. Do you have distinct eyebrows, or do you know someone who has distinct eyebrows? Well,
yes.
Guess what? They're probably a narcissist.
Have you seen yourself put on your eyebrows before? Those are distinct. I have to say. But for me, I do have an arch in my eyebrow. And
me
I
too.
Did recently take, it was funny about narcissism. There's this test that's going around on Twitter mm-hmm. where people were taking a test. It's kind of like a psychology test to find out how much on the scale are they a narcissist. And I'm not gonna lie to you, I took it. I did score a little bit high, and I was a little concerned. But now that I know about the eyebrows, wow, don't look at my Instagram.
You're all the way out there, Ryan. So what are you gonna do about it? And the ceremony's peace prize went to the governments of India and Pakistan for having their diplomats ring each other's doorbells in the middle of the night and then run away before anyone had a chance to answer the door. This is real, by the way. It happened 2 years ago. The award for economics went to an international team of experts for trying. This is actually really fascinating. They tried to quantify the relationship between different countries' national income inequality and the average amount of mouth-to-mouth kissing. And they found actually that countries who had more kissing had less income inequality.
Whoever came up with this had to be like really high, because I don't understand who thought this was a good idea. But it does seem like there is some effort being put into it. It's just hilarious what they are considering to be like their IG Nobel Prizes.
It's kind of like the Darwin Awards.
People I've never heard of the Darwin Awards.
Yeah, the Darwin Awards, people that do, that die from kind of accidents and dumb decisions.
Oh, no. I've heard of the awards that are kind of right after the Oscars, where are right before. They you know those?
Yes.
Kind of like the worst movies or something.
What was that again? Yes.
I forgot what they're called, too.
So let's wrap this up with the Medical Education Award. And this went to, you're going to laugh at this, U.S. President Donald Trump, U.K. Prime Minister Boris Johnson, Brazilian leader Jair Bolsonaro, along with a handful of other world leaders, for using the pandemic to teach the world that, quote, politicians can have a more immediate effect on life and death than scientists and doctors can. And that was, of course, a dig at those politicians' handling of the coronavirus crisis. So there you go. You can find out more online about the
I found
IG
out what
Nobel
it was called.
Prize. What?
It's called the Razzies. That's
yes.
it. The Razzies. Yes, yes, yes. Thank
the
you,
Razzies.
Producer Chance.
Now coming up, federal funding is being threatened to be withheld from Connecticut schools who support trans athletes. Here we go again. That's next in What's Trending This Hour. Okay, we've got breaking news right now. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg has died at age 87. Now, this news just came out and it surprised all of us. We know that she has been in and out of the hospital and sick. But once again, I don't think anyone ever imagined that she would be gone. It's one of those lives, right?
Yeah, she has been fighting cancer for so long at this point, and she's such an icon. And honestly, it's so funny. I think we always make these jokes about wow, if anyone, if she needs a kidney, if she needs a transplant, yep, we are here for her. And it's so sad to know that she is not with us anymore, because her legacy is so amazing. And she was fighting for so many great things, and she has fought for so many great things. And so it's devastating news for sure.
Yeah, the Supreme Court did announce her death, saying the cause was complications from cancer. And we will be continuing to cover the story as it breaks, discussing the legacy of her life and also what this means for the Supreme Court moving forward. So please hang out with us here on Let's Go There as we continue to cover this breaking story. And of course, we've got what's trending this hour right now, because more coming from the campaign trail. President Trump went after Biden's VP, Kamala Harris, during a rally in Mosinee, Wisconsin.
So I said brilliantly, he'll never pick her because she was too terrible to him. She was the worst of everybody by far, I would say. But she picked him, and hopefully that's going to be history. It's not going to matter. And that is no way for a woman to become the first president, that's for sure. And if a woman is going to become the first president of the United States, it can't be her. That would rip our country apart. This is not what people want. And she comes in through the back door. This would not be what people want, especially because it's her.
I mean, that is just harsh. Like, he plays very dirty. And reporting about the event, Politico noted that the president repeatedly characterizes Harris as a California liberal and among the most far-left candidates in the Senate. Someone who he says is out of touch with the concerns of everyday Americans. That is how he is painting the picture of her. Now, the U.S. Department of Education is threatening to withhold some federal funding from Connecticut school districts if they follow a state policy that allows transgender girls to compete as girls in high school sports. In response to a complaint filed last year by several cisgender female track athletes who argued that two transgender female runners had an unfair physical advantage, the federal agency's Office for Civil Rights determined in May this, that Connecticut's policy violates the civil rights, not of the transgender girls trying to compete, but of the athletes who are not transgender. School districts, including New Haven, as well as the Capital Region Education Council, were asked around the beginning of September to sign a document to receive grants from a program for magnet schools that states they will not participate in any interscholastic sporting events unless the Connecticut Athletic Conference that they're part of changes its policy on transgender athletes, meaning they are not allowed. And that's why everyone is saying they are threatening to pull that funding, which is around $3 million a year, to New Haven and the Education Council. So we'll be following that story as it continues. The early results on mail-in voting from one of the most crucial states in the country are in. Guess what the results are? Black voters' ballots are getting rejected more than four times as often as white voters' ballots.
That's not shocking.
Yeah, of the more than 60,000 votes cast by white voters so far in North Carolina, around 644 have been rejected. That's 1.07%. By comparison, I'll just go by percentages here. There was a 4.41% rejection from black voters. So that's the data coming out of North Carolina. And that was some what's trending this hour, but we're moving to top stories in pop culture and entertainment news. These are fun. What's going on, Ryan?
All right, let's get into the tea reports, those pop culture moments that are trending right now. And oh my God, the internet is going crazy because, you know, there have been a lot of celebrity Zoom events and reunions during this quarantine.
Yeah.
But the Fast Times at Ridgemont High virtual table read that happened yesterday might actually have beat them all, because Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston got very flirty and Shia LaBeouf goes very wild. I mean, has a lot of fun, and he's like smoking the marijuana on camera. It's hilarious. So here's who's involved. So the table read gathered the 1982 film star Sean Penn, along with Jennifer Aniston, Brad Pitt, Julia Roberts, Shia LaBeouf, Matthew McConaughey, and so many more. Comedian Dan Cook hosted the event, which has raised $50,000 and counting for Penn's organization, CORE. Now, of course, people were freaking out over Jennifer Aniston and Brad Pitt. Here is a moment, like a small little clip of like them just having a cute flirty time during this like table read.
Hi, Brad. You know how cute I always thought you were. I think you're so sexy. Will you come to me?
that happened. And then another highlight of this whole entire thing was that Morgan Freeman narrated the high school movie. And it's actually weird because he talks about Brad's character having to like masturbate. And it's just, it's wild. So if you haven't seen it, you got to check it out. Also, John Legend, Jimmy Kimmel, and Henry Golding also participated in the Zoom. That's your tea report of the pop culture moments that are trending right now. Hit us up at LGT Show and let us know what you think.
I guess what's the lesson here, Paris? That you don't need to be a dumb blonde to get attention?
There is no lesson. Let's move on.
All right. As we mentioned, there's breaking news that Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg has died at 87.
Around the death
of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who passed away at 87 from complications with cancer. Legal, cultural, feminist icon. And with us to discuss this right now is political commentator Jackie Kopell. Thanks again for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, as always. Obviously, today is particularly poignant and sad.
I mean, just another day in 2020, it feels like, where everything is constantly going wrong. What did, Ruth Bader Ginsburg mean to you? Because this is really tough news.
Yeah, I mean, look, she is first of all, she and I, we are both Cornell alums. So I feel sort of oddly more connected, maybe.
Yeah.
She also met her husband at Cornell, and their love affair and relationship is sort of one for the record books. She really, not only is she a pioneer in the legal world as a woman, a feminist championing, the rights of women and the rights of spouses and partners, but her husband actually really, embodied what it looked like to be a man who actually wildly successful in his own right, but also wildly supportive of his wife. He was the cook. She's apparently well known to be a terrible cook. She would just work. He would apparently sit in her chambers in court and just, read and wait for her to finish her work.
Wow.
So in her personal and professional life, she's really this, emblem of a modern woman who also was ahead of her time by leaps and bounds.
And we saw that in the 2018 documentary RBG, which, by the way, is a beautiful telling of her story. And I'm sure a lot of people will, as a feminist icon, really using her skills as a lawyer and then joining the Supreme Court, she really fought for the rights of women. And let's talk about what she was able to do and how she did it.
So she's pretty remarkable. Again, if you want to get, you can watch the documentary. You can also watch the live action movie that was all about her life. You'll see a lot of obituaries, but she was able to rise to the Supreme Court in large part because of her work on behalf of women.
Mm-hmm.
The first big case that she challenged the law had barred actually a Colorado man from taking a tax deduction for the care of his mother. And the IRS at the time said that by statute, this deduction could only be claimed by a woman or women or widowed or divorced men. But this gentleman had never been married. And it was a way to actually advocate gender equality using a man, which was this brilliant way of advocating for gender equality subsequently for women, because you're setting a precedent that men and women should be created equal, whether that's the care of their, spouse, or in this case, mother, or, in other ways, certainly in the workplace.
Well, so
that
was
sort of her first foray, which is this very ingenious way of addressing gender equality.
Well, the one thing that keeps playing in my mind as we're talking about this right now is that she got to see Kamala Harris, the first woman on a major ticket, for the Democratic Party, when it comes to that, like it just feels like it's historic in some ways. Like all of her work got to really, see out what really is possible and what it really means for this country to see Kamala Harris in the position that she's in.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, RBG for so many people is the example of what it looks like to advocate, right? She famously has quotes about basically asking men to take their feet off of the necks of women just to allow women to breathe, right? To allow them to have the basics of success. That the only way to do that would be to take their feet off their necks. Also, she was asked about, oh, what does this mean if more women join the court? What if we have an all female court? And she's like, well, we have all male. We've had all male ones for most of the history. Why would that be so bad? Why shouldn't we have 9 women on the court?
She was also known in the past, not as much possibly now, but for entertaining the other side and her friendships with the other side on the Supreme Court, and how that played into really pushing for the rights of those cases she was fighting for.
She famously had a deep friendship with Antonin Scalia. Now, keep in mind, Scalia is was extremely conservative, and she was considered, you know, very liberal. They both shared a love of opera. I believe on New Year's, they and their spouses would celebrate New Year's each year together. And no doubt those relationships in the background that she was able to make, not just with Scalia, but with all of her other colleagues, no doubt that played a huge role in her success and ability to get things done, write majority or minority opinions, and really have a voice. Even Justice Roberts, who is, you know, appointed by a Republican, he spoke, you know, he has beautiful sentiments just talking really about how she's a lion of the Supreme Court. There's an enormous amount of respect that all parties had for her. And this is a huge loss to the judiciary and to the legal community.
All right. Well, Jackie Coppell, that is for sure. Thank you so much for joining us.
Discussing
as the breaking news. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg has passed at age 87 from complications with cancer. In a statement dictated to her granddaughter, Clara Spera, days before her death, she said, "My most fervent wish is that I will not be replaced until a new president is installed." Now, we discussed her fight for gender rights before, but she also fought for racial and civil rights until the day she died. And back with us is Fox News contributor Richard Fowler as we continue to dive into this breaking story. Thanks again for being back.
It's good to be with you guys. I got to tell you, this is a devastating loss for the country. In my early career, I got a chance to actually work with Ruth Bader Ginsburg's husband, Marty Ginsburg, and their relationship was just one of remarkable love. I remember distinctly during one of Justice Ginsburg's battles with pancreatic cancer, her husband, who's also deceased as well, ran up to my desk and he was like, "Richard, I have to take a couple of days, and I'm not sure when I'm going to be back." And literally 2 minutes later, there was a news report of the justice having pancreatic cancer, but that's what their love was. Their relationship was this ideal that if my partner is sick or something is wrong with my partner, then everything else stops. Even though I'm a professor, even though I'm a Supreme Court justice, everything stops because their support for each other was beyond belief. I mean, there's stories that when he was in law school and they were both in law school together, he was sick and couldn't attend class. And so she would go to her classes and then his classes.
I can't. The sacrifice.
Richard,
I just bring tears to my eyes. And thank you for sharing that very personal story today.
I mean, what's interesting is, you know, her nickname was Notorious RBG, right? I think it really spoke to how much of a badass she was. Can you talk about her fight when it comes to race and, you know, the discrimination that's been happening in this country, because she is a fighter and I love Notorious RBG.
Yes. I mean, there's just so many cases that you can really think of when you think about her legacy, right? Not only for civil rights, but also for LGBTQ rights, right? She was one of the votes that voted to ensure that you could, like, the First Amendment protection for churches' anti-gay funeral pickets. I mean, she was involved in disallowing all sodomy laws for same-sex activities. There was just so much recognizing the LGBTQ community as a protected class in civil rights, right? She was also a justice that believed deeply in the right to vote. And if you look at her record when it comes to voting rights, every time it came to how do we expand, how do we ensure that more Americans have the right to vote and not less, she was always on the side of increase, working to make our democracy better and ensuring that every American had access, fair and equitable access to the ballot. That was one issue. That's just of the many that she's known for. this is, that's just some of these issues, right? And you have to really think about, when you think about her legacy, you have to think about the current status quo of the court, right? The court currently sits with a 5-4 balance, with a conservative majority having 5 votes and 4 on the liberal side, as one would argue, right? And every time, Ruth Bader Ginsburg was one of those justices that believed in the ideal of the law, meaning that one of her best friends was Scalia, Anton Scalia, who was opposed to her on most issues, but they were able to come to the table and say, how do we make this better? We disagree, but how do we make this better? And her ruling spoke to that. And the reason why she's known as notorious RBG is because of her dissent, right? And when liberals became in the majorities of the court, she was known for saying, I dissent, and here's why. I dissent because you're infringing upon a woman's rights. I dissent because you're infringing upon a gay, lesbian, transgendered, or bisexual person's right. I dissent today because you're discriminating against an African American or the member of the Latinx community. Every time she had a dissent, she did a dissent for the less fortunate, for the vulnerable, and for those who were just trying to live out the American dream, a dream that she believed in and a dream that she also fought to achieve. Remember, when she went to law school, she was one of the only girls, and everybody thought that she was a joke, but she ended up being in the Harvard Law Review, right? She was, and so when you really speak to her in Columbia, she was at Harvard and then she transferred to Columbia. And in both cases, you really speak to somebody who understands what it is. I think one of her famous quotes is, I don't really want, all I want men to do is take their knee off my neck, right?
Yeah.
And I think those words sort of echo and reverberate today.
And you know, these stories are so consistent, right? Everyone seems to, you know, be sharing the same feelings. And thank you so much, Richard Fowler, for joining us today. I know it was very last minute, but it's so important and we appreciate you. Again, that was Fox News contributor Richard Fowler. We'll continue to cover this breaking news.
I expect to see 3-4, perhaps even more women on the high court bench, women not shaped from the same mold, but of different complexions.
That was Associate Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who died this evening. And according to the Supreme Court, made this announcement. She was surrounded by her family at her home in Washington, D.C. due to complications from her pancreatic cancer. She was 87 years old. Now, Justice Ginsburg was appointed to the Supreme Court by President Clinton in 1993. She was the second woman appointed to the court and served more than 27 years.
Oh my goodness. I mean, Shira, I know we kind of talked about it when the news broke, but how do you feel as a woman in what Ruth Bader Ginsburg kind of has done as a feminist icon? How do you feel about this?
I mean, talk about a legacy, someone who will be remembered truly for what she stood for, her work, her service, and really fighting for the voices that needed to be heard, whose rights were being taken away. She lived that value system, right? Yeah. When you talk about fighting for the rights of others, she did that 24/7. She was working up until the day she died. Even when she was going in and out of hospital, she continued fighting that fight.
Yeah.
And I find that it's beautiful. It's inspiring. And of course, she was an icon, and how she connected with this generation. Even at her age, she made it cool to do the work that she was doing, right?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I don't think we could have said it any better. And I even think of like John Lewis. We've lost two major icons this year, John Lewis and now her. And it's so unfortunate that, you know, they left this country at a time where everything is highly politicized. The country seems and feels divided. But I just feel like their legacy and what we are celebrating them for and what we're celebrating Ruth Bader Ginsburg for is going to be remembered until the end of time. It's absolutely incredible. And I know the internet is on fire with so many reactions from celebrities to politicians.
Everyone, of course, is just finding out about this. We actually saw it on NPR and then we were waiting for confirmation. Jake Tapper then posted it. And then, of course, it went crazy on the internet, and everyone has been reacting. And this is one of those things when you see her name on social media, everyone is scared and worried that it's that day. And today, unfortunately, it was that day that we were all really scared about, right? We were not looking forward to this day. And so, yeah, we have a lot of tweets coming in. Rip to RBG is trending. Rudy Giuliani actually posted, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, what is a credit to the court. I disagreed with many of her decisions, but they were all well-reasoned and well-argued. She was a close friend of her ideological opposite, Justice Scalia. They both loved opera, Law in the USA. May she rest in peace. A lot of people are, you know, bringing up the other justice that, who we've mentioned in previous segments, who she was friends with, but on the other side, and how now they will have fun together in the afterlife.
You know what I'm wondering, though, and we're going to actually talk about this coming up soon, is this moment where I'm also seeing Kavanaugh trending, right? And I'm wondering, should we politicize her death in this way? And I know this is going to be a conversation that we are going to have coming up soon. So stick around for that, because she is a huge political figure. It feels like this is something that she would want us to be talking about and using as motivation to get out to the polls and vote. But I really want to know, we're going to see Republicans doing what, you know, we just heard by saying, well, I didn't agree with her on everything, but she was awesome.
Yeah.
So I really want to talk about the balance coming up soon.
Another post that I wanted to bring up, and the fact that it is Rosh Hashanah tonight, and that is the Jewish New Year, and how interesting it is that she passed on this night. And according to Jewish tradition, a person who dies on Rosh Hashanah, which began tonight, is a tzaddik, a person of great righteousness.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
Which is very powerful to think about that tonight as we go into this Jewish holiday. And we're going to be continuing to bring you more around this breaking news. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg passing tonight.
2020 has brought us many surprises,
and this latest one just hits hard. It hits where it hurts, right? Ruth Bader Ginsburg has passed at age 87 from complications with cancer, and we continue to cover this breaking news. Journalist Jarrett Hill, co-host of the Fanti podcast, joins us right now. Thanks again for being here during these tragic times.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This is a hard one.
How does, and I think we've been asking all of our guests who's been joining us last minute like this, what does Ruth Bader Ginsburg mean to you? How are you impacted by this moment right
now? Ruth Bader Ginsburg, I was tweeting about this earlier, that she literally chose to die in office rather than be replaced by this president. Like, she literally gave up the end of her life because she could have retired 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And I am taken aback by that commitment to this country that I certainly don't have right now. I can tell you that.
Right.
And so I see her example of what she was willing to give for the sake of this country. And I say politicize her death until it all comes out, like until we cross the finish line. Like, I think every person has to be activated over this, because we are in some grave danger.
And speaking of which, Mitch McConnell said he's not going to wait until a new president is in to replace her. What do you say to that?
Yeah, I mean, no one has ever accused Mitch McConnell of being a man of scruples. I'm heartened to hear that Lisa Murkowski, one of the Republican senators that were kind of eyeing, it's Lisa Murkowski, Mitt Romney, and Susan Collins. Lisa Murkowski said that she would not vote to replace someone on the Supreme Court before the election. Some reporting is saying the election, some are saying 2021.
Yeah,
I think that is a bit reassuring if it's to 2021. If it's until the election, that's not reassuring, because there's a lame duck Congress that comes after that. A lame duck Senate that could still approve someone. So now we're looking at Mitt Romney and Susan Collins, and we'll see how much faith we have that we can put there. And I just have no expectations of these Republicans doing anything that resembles responsible.
Yeah. And you said something super powerful about politicizing her death. And I think we're already kind of seeing that from, you know, Republican responses, like Rudy Giuliani saying, you know, I've worked with her for a very long time. I didn't agree with her on everything. What does that really mean in terms of politicizing her death? Is there a proper way of doing it, in the sense of it not being polarizing and kind of falling in between these party lines?
I think politicizing her death means using this to mobilize, because Democrats are Democrats, and I don't even just mean Democrats, right? I mean like progressives, people who believe in civil rights and non-discrimination and women's rights and women and equality for all, and you know that Black Lives Matter, and I mean people who are on the progressive side of the spectrum. This is the call to action, if ever there was one, because we have got to do any and everything we can, one, to get people to vote, but two, to try and slow down any kind of process that, you know, Mitch McConnell will pull, because God knows they will. It's horrifying. And so when I say politicize her death, I mean, use this as a call to action to get people moving, because this is the whole ball game.
It just dropped. Everything changed right now. Journalist Jarrett Hill joins us right now as we continue to look back at the life of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who has left us at the age of 87 tonight. And, you know, what a way to end the week, go into the weekend, and just like such sudden news. What happens next?
Well, I mean, that is the $1 million question.
The big question. When I tell you I got so much anxiety when you asked that, Shira, I'm like,
sorry.
It's a completely fair question. And yes. I think it's important for people to think about it in terms of the longevity of the decisions that get made here. We have five, you know, conservative justices on the court. We have now three progressive justices on the court. If we have a sixth conservative justice on the court has changed for a generation, or, you know, I mean, for a very long time.
And you know, we actually reported here about kind of the decision making a lot of the court was making. And it felt like, oh, wow, they're actually moving in the right direction. And now it feels like, well, how much was RBG playing into that and helping that happen? And now it kind of feels like it's very scary because we don't know what's going to happen at this point.
I mean, like, we have a case in November about the Affordable Care Act and the individual mandate, and the president is out touting, you know, how he wants to give people health care, but they have no plan for it. They've been actively working to disassemble, to, you know, to break apart the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, but they're outrunning on it as if they are, you know, really looking out for folks. Mind you, they don't have a platform, but it's something that they talk about. That case is happening in November after the election, right? We have, you know, myriad cases that will be before the court before. Even in a best case scenario, let's say Republicans acted like they had some sense about them and they said, okay, fine, we won't do an appointment until there's a new Senate, which again, I can't even imagine those words. But even if that did happen, there are still cases that go before the court before we could even get a new person appointed. It is terrifying to think that in a Joe Biden administration, we're still so far away from when that could happen.
Yeah. Can we leave this on a high note? Can you say something positive, like a word that comes up when we look back now at her legacy in life?
I mean, you've got to be grateful for the tenacity of a woman like RBG.
Yes.
I mean, we have all seen the videos of her in recent months in a workout, right? Lifting weights, doing the push-ups. I mean, she's kind of been immortalized by SNL, but like she's an incredible figure.
I joke about Shira being the only white woman that I trust, but I think it might have to be RBG.
Well, Jarrett Hill, thanks as always for jumping in and joining us. That was Jarrett Hill, journalist and host of the Fanti podcast. Now coming up, we continue to cover the breaking news. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg has passed at the age of 87 from complications with cancer. More reactions next, including the history behind her fight for gender rights. Stay tuned. As we all deal with the shocking passing of Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg at age 87 from pancreatic cancer, there are right now videos being shared on social media of people gathering outside the Supreme Court to honor her tonight. And many are posting their reactions on social media. Hillary Clinton tweeted this: "Justice Ginsburg paved the way for so many women, including me. There will never be another like her." And also Speaker Pelosi has posted this on Twitter: "Tonight, the flags are flying at half staff over the Capitol to honor the patriotism of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Every woman and girl, and therefore every family in America, has benefited from her brilliance." Bernie Sanders tweeted: "The passing of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg is a tremendous loss to our country. She was an extraordinary champion of justice and equal rights and will be remembered as one of the great justices in modern American history."
Now, unfortunately, let's look at the other side of this. U.S. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell made the following statement on the passing of U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. He basically said this: Justice Ginsburg overcame one personal challenge and professional barrier after another. She climbed from a modest Brooklyn upbringing to a seat on our nation's highest court into the pages of American history. He goes on to talk about her legacy, but then ends his statement by saying, President Trump's nominee will receive a vote on the floor of the United States Senate. So he spent his entire moment, and Republicans, from what I'm seeing online, Republicans, Tucker Carlson's already on there talking about Supreme Court's nominees. And so Republicans are really going to be taking advantage of this, unfortunately. And we heard it here first that Mitch McConnell said that President Trump's nominee will receive a vote on the floor of the United States Senate.
Wow. Just wow. I mean, not surprising that they would jump in pretty much immediately as this is happening.
Well, I mean, he couldn't have waited until after that. Like, it just makes no sense to me. It's infuriating, to be honest. It's infuriating.
Yeah. And a lot of people, of course, are just really sad and surprised as we're going into this weekend with really this just tragic news of her passing at age 87. Everyone from around the world reacting to this and even sharing their own pictures dressed like her, right? You know, during Halloween, I think it was last year, a lot of people dress as Notorious RBG, right? Mm-hmm. That was like the go-to costume.
Yeah.
They're sharing pictures and quotes. And we actually have a really incredible compilation right now that we're about to play. This is typically our Yaz Queen of the day, as we know, as we wrap up the show. And in honor of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, here are some of her most inspiring speeches from over the years.
And wait, before we go, she deserves the Yes Queen for sure, for sure. After all the work she's done, Yes Queen.
If you want to be a true professional, you will do something outside yourself, something to repair tears in your community.
No door should be closed to people willing to spend the hours of effort needed to make dreams come true.
We are a nation made strong by people like you.